Welcome to Back to the Roundtable. This Sunday, June 3rd, the 8th annual Pride March and Festival sponsored by the Hudson Valley LGBTQ Community Center will take place in New Paltz. The march begins at 1 p.m. with Grand Marshals Maurice Hinchy and centenarian activist KZ McKay. Am I saying that right? Keezy McKay, which is very, very cool. The Hudson Valley LGBTQ Center is located at 300 Wall Street in Kingston, New York. We're joined now by Virginia Puzo and Jan Whitman to learn about this weekend's Pride March and the other wonderful work that they do. Ginny and Jan, I thank you very much for being with us. It's wonderful to have you both here.
Thanks for having us, Joe.
First of all, Let us talk a little bit about the event that's happening on Sunday, and this is the 8th annual event. How did this originally come to be?
Well, there's a long history, and Ginny, I think you should talk about it because you're actually the person who posed the question that led us to where we are today.
All my fault.
Yes, all your fault.
Actually, there were two women who had moved up from New York and very accustomed to gay pride events because they lived in the Metropolitan Avenue area. So the marriages that had taken place in the February before really inspired them to say, let's really celebrate pride. So we put a group together and had a very successful initial pride event. After that was over, it occurred to me that having been on the organizing board of the New York City LGBT Community Center, that we had a fabulous group of people who could do something like that here in the Hudson Valley, because there was nothing that provided services to our community from Rockland area all the way up here to Albany. No organization that had a space, no program to deal with the needs. And we actually said, let's keep going, let's build a center, let's do a needs assessment and move forward on this.
And we were pretty fortunate that every person you could think of that you might need, whether it was a lawyer to help us get the 501c3, or people working in fundraising, or people with graphic skills to help shape a message for the center, every person you could think of who you might need appeared, came forward. And, you know, it's been just a wonderful thing because there aren't all that many community centers that aren't in urban areas. It's very difficult to find a gay community center in the country.
Mm. And that's not out of a need, right? I mean, that's what's so interesting about that.
Correct.
One of the things we found, the first thing we did was do a needs assessment in the area, and we contacted social service programs and asked them specifically, what do you have that is responsive to a client who's gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered? And every single social service agency in the Hudson Valley could not provide a single reference for us. In other words, here's some place you might go. So coming up with the zero responsiveness on the part of social service agencies, it was clear that we ought to get out there and begin to educate our social service agencies to recognize what the unique needs of LGBT people are, particularly the unique needs of the elderly and young people in a rural environment. So that's been pretty much our program direction, and it's been very successful.
And you can't imagine how important it is, especially in a rural area, where as part of a national conversation, you often hear talk of bullying and anti-bullying campaigns. Well, it doesn't just happen in other places. In Ulster County alone this past year, there are a couple of incidents. One that rose to the level, according to the Justice Department, of being a hate crime.
And that's where it becomes so disturbing and something that you want to have a place where, I mean, obviously, well, you know, justice hopefully will take care of some of this. But as far as the person who is the victim, that they have to go and that other people can talk about and show concern and do something about it.
Well, fortunately, we have a law now that's been passed and takes effect 1 month from today, the Dignity for All Students Act, which really addresses the environment in which kids go to school. When you think about it, the school is the social environment of young people. That's it. If they go to school and they're intimidated, they go to school and they're humiliated, they go to school and they're bullied, how do you expect a kid to learn in that environment? The Dignity for All Student Act is an opportunity for us, for example, to reach out and work with school personnel to help them implement what the Dignity for All Students Act is requiring. And that's namely that the curriculum address these issues, that they collect data that of incidents of harassment and bullying, and that they have to report it, and that they stipulate issues of bullying, harassment, discrimination in their codes of conduct. So the law has a vision of the culture in schools changing, but we have a responsibility, since it's an unfunded mandate, to go out there and educate the school personnel so that that culture really does change.
One of the things that I think is so interesting as we're at a time now where so much is changing in this community, and laws are changing, and ideas are changing, and people are evolving, to use the popular term. their thoughts have been an evolution, and they're evolving. I mean, we just had the court decision yesterday about the Marriage Act and the denying benefits of same-sex couples is unconstitutional. And people hear that, but don't realize that, okay, well, now that's going to be appealed, and then we have to go on to the next step. And there's still a long way before anything actually happens. Mm-hmm. And really, you're kind of the clearinghouse of all of that to explain to people what it is that they have the right and what they don't have the right to do as all of these changes are happening around
us. Exactly. And that gives us a mission to educate. And our record this year has been phenomenal. We've trained thus far this year 230 health and social service providers around issues related to the LGBT community. We've trained 128 school personnel covering 20 school districts in the Hudson Valley. So there's the Pride event, there's the celebration of a march and a festival and an after party, but there's the day after and the day after that and the day after that. And that work is serious work. It's work that oftentimes is underfunded. And it really relies on the community coming forward and supporting its institutions. And I must say our community has been very good about recognizing the need and the service we provide.
Do we get a false sense of security living where we do? In the sense of when we cover this issue as a news organization and we talk about the events that are going on and we hear... And there's a lot going on, and it's a very active community, and there's a lot happening. Does that give some of us in the Northeast specifically a perhaps not a real understanding of what is happening in the redder states? You know, in the center of the country.
But, you know, we have red state areas right here in upstate New York. We don't have to go to Iowa or
right.
You know. We need to go into our more rural communities to find the level of isolation, the level of loneliness, this sense of I can't really be myself in my community or around my fellow students or maybe even with my parents.
That's universal.
So that is that. But in an urban environment, a kid can take a subway and go to the LGBT community center. Up here, if you want to come to our center, your parent has to give you a ride.
Right.
And if you're not out to your parent, what's your access?
Right.
So I think it's very important. When I was head of the National Gay Task Force in the 80s, I went to every place in between New York and San Francisco and L.A. And believe me, there were people in those days that just lived in such abandonment and isolation. And then AIDS came. Mm. So, you know, there's a history, and there is much to be said about the fact that it's still a life-threatening condition to be gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered in many places in this country. And New York is not absolved of having some of that ignorance and discrimination being present in some of its communities.
And Joe, I think you can always draw comparisons. I mean, people will say, well, at least you live in America. In other countries, you know, they would be killing you. And not that that doesn't happen here. It has happened and does happen that people are murdered simply for being gay, because someone doesn't care for the fact that they're gay. That ministers can stand up in their pulpits and advocate for gay people to be put behind fences and then killed, which is one of the big news stories this week, and then to have two more ministers nationally agree with that. You know, you can say what you want. We've got a long way to go in this country to get to a place where people do have equal rights under the law. And how long should it take for social justice to occur? For all the people who get nervous about, oh, gay marriage and things are changing and marriage equality means that my straight marriage is going to be ruined, how long should it take for people to have freedom?
Mm. And that all freedom is not created equal. I mean, that's the whole thing that fascinates me. I don't understand. I was just talking to Representative John Lewis about this, one of the great civil rights mm-hmm. leaders. He was on Monday, and talking to him about, okay, you know, but equal is equal, in the sense of, you know, shouldn't that have been come with the fighting that happened then in the 1960s, or is it? Do you have to have the scars? Here's a man that was beaten and has the scars to prove it. I mean, does that have to ultimately, I'm not saying that it should, but I'm just saying, you know, does it have to happen to make that, to bring to your point of how much do you have to fight? How long does it have to go on? And that is what seems to be so interesting. But I think the two of you, are you both optimistic about where we are now? Because there does seem to be momentum behind the change.
There's a great deal of momentum behind the change, and I think we would both either be considered optimistic or crazy because we are optimistic,
yeah.
And our community is optimistic. That doesn't mean that it doesn't become depressing and that it doesn't become frustrating when there's a setback. But, you know, when we step off with our march on Sunday, in a sense, we're stepping off following a much larger march of people who have pursued freedom. We're a contingent in that spectrum of people over the years that have recognized that they have to struggle, that it will take time, that you must always educate people. And I'm of the mind that if we got our rights tonight by some great decree from the great beyond, tomorrow morning we'd have to have a meeting to organize about how to make sure we didn't lose them.
Right.
And if you need anything more than the rollback on voting rights to see that, you know, you're not paying attention. The effort in the country to really make voting difficult after so many people struggled and, in fact, died for voting rights.
Or the attempt at the rollback on women's rights.
Absolutely.
No, it's a great point. Absolutely. The march takes place on Sunday. And what exactly will, for folks who want to take part in this, what's going to be taking place?
Well, the march will step off at 1 o'clock. Groups are forming at the middle school in New Paltz at noontime. So if you want to be in the march, just show up at noontime. We're going to be led by a couple of great grand marshals, Kesey McKay is a 100-year-old lesbian, and she's seen it all. We're pleased to have her be taking part in leading the procession. And, of course, Congressman Maurice Hinchey has been a wonderful friend to the gay community for many, many years. We're honored to have him stepping off with us, in part as a tribute, honoring his service to the right. gay and lesbian mm-hmm. community for all these years as he retires. After the march, a wonderful festival takes place at Hasbrook Park. Lots of great entertainment this year. Ubaka Hill is a drummer and a musician who'll be performing. We also have Big Sister is an all-women rock band that's local from the Woodstock area, and they're terrific. And Ryan Quesada is a transgender singer-songwriter and motivational speaker from Long Island, who we're all looking forward to hearing Ryan perform this year.
One contingent in the march will be led by Jason West, the mayor of New Paltz, who performed those first marriages. Yeah. So we're very happy to have Jason, who's now again mayor in New Paltz, lead off the contingent of those people who were married then, in that February, and those who have married since it's become legal in New York State.
The 8th Annual Pride March and Festival, sponsored by the Hudson Valley LGBTQ Community Center, will take place on Sunday, June 3rd in New Paltz, New York. To learn more, visit lgbtqcenter.org. Ginny and Jan, I thank you very much for being here. I wish you all the luck in the world and have a wonderful Sunday.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having
us. Best of luck in your work. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.